It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. By now, we should all know about the hazards of distracted driving. Now, however, public safety officials are calling attention to a different issue, distracted walking. What is this problematic trend, and how can we be better and safer pedestrians? We'll try to find out this morning on the Morning Show. Do you ever get in an accident because you were distracted by a smartphone or something else? What happened? And has your behavior changed since then? Drivers, ever had a run-in with a distracted pedestrian when you had the right-of-way? Tell us about that. And have you noticed an increase in the number of pedestrians distracted by their smartphones? Why do you think people aren't more aware of dangers inherent in sharing the road with cars? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. David Pabst is director of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation's Bureau of Transportation Safety. David, good morning and welcome to the Morning Show.
Good morning and thank you for having me.
When we think about distracted pedestrians, what is it we're talking about?
Well, we're talking about people walking or even riding bicycles. Technically, they're pedestrians that are not paying attention to what they're supposed to be doing. They've got their face in their phone, head down, and they're not paying attention to what's going on around them.
Pretty tough to ride a bicycle that way. You're often moving pretty quickly. Pedestrians, I've seen people reading books and walk into light poles. In fact, I think I did that once myself. What other ways are there to be distracted besides our devices?
Well, you can just be not paying attention. You could be deeply in thought. It's just a matter of, you know, being aware of your surroundings, especially as a pedestrian. You are a vulnerable road user and you have no protections. It's just so important that you pay attention to what's going on around you.
Besides the obvious of maybe being struck by a car, what other kinds of dangers are there for distracted pedestrians?
Well, you could step into a culvert. There could be construction on the sidewalk, hitting a pole, just as you had mentioned earlier. Tripping, running into other pedestrians. I don't know how many times I've been in the mall and people are distracted by their phones and there are inevitable crashes that occur by pedestrian to pedestrian.
Well, I guess if you're moving, regardless of whether you're on foot or in a vehicle or on a bicycle, you need to be paying attention to where you are and what you're where you're going and who else is there. On a serious note, pedestrian deaths in Wisconsin are on the rise, 49 in 2016, 59 in 2017. How much of this do you attribute to pedestrians being more distracted?
Well, we know that there's a combination of the pedestrians being distracted and also the drivers and the vehicles being distracted. So you put those two together, and we believe that has, you know, increased the vulnerability of our walking population. It's a combination of factors, and certainly when you have someone in a 4,000-pound vehicle not paying attention to what's going on around them, driving into an area full of pedestrians, it's just a recipe for disaster.
Well, and of course, a lot of city streets in Wisconsin, not just out in the rural areas, but things like crosswalks and things like that that drivers need to be aware of. It sounds like everybody just needs to be paying more attention. In terms of the quantity of distracted pedestrians out there, how have we seen that change over the years, and why do we think it's increasing?
Well, I sometimes wonder about the distractions. There's always been, you know, some forms of distracting. You mentioned reading a book and walking into something. Distractions change over the years, and there's been only one really good study that I'm aware of that shows how many people are being distracted, and that was done in Flagstaff, Arizona, and with a combination of in New York City. And what they found was that roughly 15% of pedestrians are truly, truly distracted while they're entering the intersection. So, you know, it doesn't seem like a huge percentage, but that percentage is still big enough to create a safety hazard.
Well, and it's easy to do, too. I mean, there are a lot of things going on that we might be paying attention to other than that curb in front of us and the crosswalk and maybe the light that's against us. I guess I'll never forget the time I was driving on I-94 and I saw a person driving with a newspaper across the steering column. That was a kind of a frightening incident. So this isn't anything new, but now we have so many more things, our electronic devices and so forth. Is this a generational thing? Do younger people tend to be more distracted than older people?
Well, at first, that's what we saw with distracted driving, was that it was the young people that were embracing smartphones and whatnot. But now it goes across all demographics. So it really doesn't matter what your age group is, because if you'll notice when you stop at stop signs, whether it's a young person, middle-aged person, or a more mature driver, you're going to see people on their phones. You know, you just can't put it down. There's a certain amount of addictive quality to phones. They make us feel good. We want to hear that ping, I've got mail, or whatever the case may be, an email or a text. And you just want to respond to that, and our bodies are kind of trained to do that. So we're just really getting, dependent on our electronic devices.
David Pabst is director of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation's Bureau of Transportation Safety. And we're talking about distracted walking this morning on The Morning Show. For listeners who may recognize themselves as we describe their behaviors, what are some safety tips that you might have to offer, David?
Well, it's very important to walk on a sidewalk if it's available, or on a path as long as it's designed for walking. And you have to be cautious, especially at night. Most fatalities happen in the dark with people not crossing at a crosswalk. So it's always important to cross the street at a crosswalk, make sure there's good illumination there, and wear reflective clothing if you can. And, of course, pay attention, look left, right, left, and just make sure that you are paying attention to what's going on around you. Be visible.
Let me play devil's advocate for just a moment here. Some people listening might scoff at the idea of walking, say, without their headphones or not using their phone at all. And some people might not see that advice as very realistic. Is there some sort of compromise you could offer on some of these tips?
I hate to compromise on safety, but if you're paying attention at minimum with your eyes when you're entering an intersection or trying to cross the street, make that eye contact. You may not have time to take your earphones off, but make eye contact with the driver so that you know that they're not distracted and that you can cross safely.
So, David, let me ask you this. Other than appearing on this program, what kinds of things are you doing at the DOT to try to raise people's awareness of the dangers of distracted walking?
Well, we've had three or four task forces that we have funded through federal funds that increase awareness through the press and media, social media, and also through enforcement of sidewalks and crosswalk use, so that it's an enforcement where it's both for the pedestrians and for the drivers around the pedestrians, and just to increase that awareness through enforcement and education.
Do you think that there's any kind of confusion on the part of people about who has the right-of-way in a crosswalk?
Unfortunately, there probably is some confusion, but I think if everyone were to really look at the law and realize that as soon as a pedestrian is asserting himself and saying he's going to use the crosswalk, that they have the right-of-way.
But, I guess it doesn't do you any good to have the right-of-way when the person who may not recognize it is driving a 4,000-pound vehicle. So situational awareness is the key takeaway here. David Pabst, good luck in helping to educate the rest of us on paying attention, whether we're on foot, on a bicycle, on a moped, or in a motor vehicle. David Pabst, thank you so much for joining us on The Morning Show today.
Thank you.
David Pabst, director of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation's Bureau of Transportation Safety. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Has anyone ever lied to you and then manipulated you into doubting that it ever happened? Well, that's called gaslighting. From romantic relationships to the world of politics, gaslighting can be found in many different aspects of life, and if left unchallenged, it can have serious consequences. Today on The Morning Show, we'll hear from a mental health counselor about the phenomenon of gaslighting, how it differs from other personality disorders, and what you can do if you have a gaslighter in your life. Have you been the victim of gaslighting behavior? If so, what is your story? Is this something you were able to identify right away? Did it take a while? What impact did it have on your life? Are you still dealing with the consequences? Where else do you see this kind of behavior in our society? And if you engaged in this kind of behavior yourself and you know it now, what changed for you? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email is ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Stephanie Sarkis is an author and licensed mental health counselor. Her new book is Gaslighting: Recognize Manipulative and Emotionally Abusive People and Break Free. Stephanie, welcome to The Morning Show.
Thank you so much, John.
So we've heard the term gaslighting thrown around a lot lately, especially in the realm of politics. Let's start out by defining our terms. What do we mean by gaslighting?
Gaslighting is a series of manipulative behaviors, and they're designed to keep you off kilter and questioning your reality. The ultimate goal is to get control over you and make you dependent on the gaslighter.
So where did we get this term?
This term is originally from a 1934 play, which turned into a famous 1944 movie, Gaslight, directed by George Cukor. So this is a movie about a person that the husband tries to make the wife go crazy, basically, by changing different things in the environment and denying it. So changes the gas lights, make them flicker. And she said, well, there's nothing wrong with the gas lights. He's like, no, everything's fine. So she really starts thinking that she's basically going insane. And so that term became gaslighting, and that's been used since about the 1950s to describe this pattern of abusive behavior.
Can you give us a more contemporary example, a practical example of this kind of thing in action?
Sure. Our president said that what you're seeing and what you're hearing is not what's real. And I think that's a direct quote. That's a very clear example of gaslighting. You also have people that will tell you that really blatant lies that you know that there's no way they can be true. And when you call them out on them later, they say, no, I never said that. It's a constant denying of what you're saying and doing. Also, it's pitting you against other people, saying that other people said things about you that they didn't. So what happens is you try to get away from those people, and you get closer to the gaslighter. There's also a history of infidelity with a gaslighter. They have this narcissistic need to always get attention, and when that initial, fun stage of relationship kind of starts waning off, they'll go ahead and jump to the next person. They also tell other people you're crazy. Or they'll say to you, everyone else knows you're crazy. So when you try to go get help and talk to someone about this relationship, they will automatically turn it on you. And say, well, why would you even go to them? They already know that you're crazy. So people feel like they can't get help. They'll also work at trying to distance you from any relationship that takes attention off of them. So they want 100% of your attention, and they will, in the beginning of a relationship, make you feel like you're the best thing ever. But then eventually you fall off that pedestal they've put you on, and there's no way you can get back on the pedestal. And then they do what's called devaluing you, which means that you can never do any right again.
This is ultimately about control, as you indicated right at the top. You point out in the book that there isn't any significant research about gaslighting and no definition for it in the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or the DSM. In your opinion, why do you think gaslighting has been overlooked from a research perspective?
Well, when we look at diagnoses such as narcissism, narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, also known as sociopathy, these behaviors have been part of those diagnoses, but I don't think we've actually looked at them as a separate name and set of behaviors together. So we've known them as part of those diagnoses, but I don't think in the general public that term gaslighting has been used to describe these behaviors that not only happen with personality disorders, but also with other people as well.
So, Stephanie, what brought you to this topic? Why did you want to look into this?
Well, I specialize in ADHD, and I was seeing a lot of couples that were coming in where one person had ADHD and the other person would say, well, they're the problem, fix them. and they weren't taking any responsibility for their part in the relationship. And when I started talking with them, it was pretty clear that they had these tendencies of gaslighting. They would even hide their own belongings and then blame the partner for doing it, even though they're the one that has their stuff. So it became more and more obvious that there was this kind of dependent, controlling relationship going on. And I really started looking at the fact that people that have ADHD or people that have anxiety or depression tend to be more prone to being victims of gaslighters.
It seems like there are some similarities to the other disorders thing. If you pointed out narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality. But how does gaslighting differ? What are the things that distinguish it from these?
Well, what makes it different is that it happens even if you don't have a personality disorder. So let's say, for instance, you grew up with parents that were pretty dysfunctional, like they were addicted or abusive. You may have learned these behaviors as a way to survive. So then when you get older into adulthood, you're still using those behaviors in your relationship, but you may not necessarily have a personality disorder. That's one of the key features. The difference between those, though, is that if you have a personality disorder, you feel like you're okay and everyone else has a problem. If you picked up these behaviors because you had a gaslighting parent, you realize that there's something that you need to fix, and you're more likely to get treatment. And that's why personality disorders, it's hard to get treatment for this because people don't think they have a problem. That's the first step towards getting help, is admitting that you need help.
We're talking with Stephanie Sarkis, an author and licensed mental health counselor. Her new book is Gaslighting: Recognize Manipulative and Emotionally Abusive People and Break Free. We'd like to hear your story. Have you been the victim of gaslighting? If so, tell us about it. And how did you break free of it? Is it something you were able to identify right away? Did it take a while for you to realize what was going on, and what impact did it have on your life? If you're somebody who engaged in this kind of behavior and you realized it, what changed for you? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. How common is gaslighting as a kind of behavior?
We don't have a percentage with studies, but as far as personality disorders, that makes up about 5% of the U.S. population. Now, those are people that are diagnosed, so there are many people with personality disorders that have not been diagnosed. Gaslighting behaviors, I would say out of the couples I work with, I would say it happens about 30 to 40%. But again, keep in mind that I do work with people with ADHD, depression, anxiety, and gaslighting relationships tend to happen more often in those populations, is what I've seen in my practice.
Are there are the numbers different by genders, or is it pretty much an equal opportunity disorder?
Well, I may refer to the pronoun he, but the chances of being a gaslighter are actually equal across gender. So you can have people that are abusive that are female. You can have people that are abusive that are male. There's no real dominant gender in this kind of abusive behavior.
Here's an idea. What would happen if, say, you were to record someone gaslighting in the act, and then when they lie about it later, you roll the tape for them? How would they react?
They deny it, even if it's recorded. That's the amazing part. You can have undeniable proof that someone did something, and they will still deny it. They'll just say, well, you misunderstood it, or that's not what happened, or, you know, you've spliced this together, you edited it. And so they will, even when faced with, you know, evidence, they will just out and out deny. It's really astounding to see the disconnect that they have between reality and them what they want you to believe.
Or they might call you crazy for recording them in the first place, or just use the common expression these days, fake news.
Right, exactly. And fake news is one of the ways that people gaslight. This isn't real. You know, what you're seeing and hearing isn't real. This verifiable proof that you saw, nope, not happening. You just misconstrued it. And again, you're right. They'll say, well, why did you record me anyway? You must be really paranoid and crazy to do that.
What are some other common situations where we might find gaslighters?
You see gaslighters in the workplace. For instance, you'll have a coworker that takes credit for all your work. Not only that, but they also sabotage you. They'll go and tell the boss that you did things you didn't do. And also bosses can be gaslighters, too. And this isn't just a boss telling you your assignments that you need to do. This is a boss that harasses you. This is a boss that really will not leave you alone. And in those cases, it's really important to document what's happening to you. Write down dates, times, direct quotes. Make sure you're not doing that on a electronic device given to you by the office, because when you leave work, they will take it from you. So also, it's important to know your employer's handbook about what to do when you're being harassed. And there's also federal laws that protect you in cases where you're being bullied or harassed in the workplace.
We're talking with Stephanie Sarkis, an author and licensed mental health counselor. Her new book, Gaslighting, Recognize Manipulative and Emotionally Abusive People and Break Free. We have some people who are starting to call. We'll take those phone calls in a moment as our conversation continues, but still plenty of room for you to get in on this discussion. Have you been the victim of gaslighting? Or maybe you have been someone who did this and you realized it and got some help. How did that work for you? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Your gaslighting stories and more conversation with Stephanie Sarkis is just ahead. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Ever experience any of the following? Someone tells you a blatant lie, then denies ever having done so despite proof. They might use something near and dear to you as ammunition. They might try to wear you down over time. If the answer to any of these is yes, then you probably experienced gaslighting. We're learning about that from Stephanie Sarkis, author and licensed mental health counselor. So have you experienced gaslighting? If so, what's your story? Did you identify it right away or did it take a while? And what impact did it have on your life? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We have Troy, who is joining us from Muskego. Troy, good morning. Welcome to The Morning Show.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that it's horrible. I've been a victim of gaslighting in the workplace. And a couple of things just to point out. One big one is this is a person that was extremely talented, got along real social. So that makes it real difficult because a lot of times it's hard for when you go to other people, they go, oh, that person? No way. You know, not that person, because they have everybody else fooled. And the part that made it really hard was they had the boss, my boss, fooled. And, you know, it's just real frustrating. So I was a victim of gaslighting.
Troy, thanks for sharing your story with us this morning. Stephanie?
I think how Troy described a gaslighter is exactly what they're like. This is a person that has great outward appearances. Everyone thinks that they're a pillar of the community. So when you complain about them, say that this person's sabotaging me in the workplace, people go, oh, no, it would never be this person. And again, that's why it's really important to document if this is happening to you, because the outward appearance of this person, they are very good at acting, quote, unquote, normal. So it's hard to get your message across unless you have this documentation and quotes and dates about when these behaviors were happening.
Troy, thanks so much for your call. We encourage others to share their stories with us this morning at 800-642-1234. Stephanie, let's talk a little bit about the consequences of gaslighting from a physical and mental health perspective. What can this kind of behavior do to a person?
It can really wear you down emotionally and physically. So you'll start getting more illnesses. You'll start getting more colds even. You'll start having gastrointestinal issues because of the stress level. Emotionally, the gaslighters will make your self-esteem drop, especially if you try to leave the relationship. They will try to get you to come back into the relationship because they need their narcissistic kind of fix. So what they'll do is if you don't completely cut off contact with the gaslighters, if you don't block their emails or block their phone calls, when you leave, they will harass you to come back into the relationship. They'll tell you that everything's different now, but things never change with a gaslighter. They only get worse. So it's really important that when people leave, they do a no contact with the gaslighter. If they have kids with a gaslighter, it's strongly recommended that people seek the counsel of an attorney and also get a very detailed parenting plan. And that tells you exactly how you and the gaslighter should behave with the kids. And also that's enforced by the court. So it's really important that there are detailed rules about how to contact each other and also how to treat each other and how to not talk about the other parent in front of the kids.
Troy, are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay. Can you talk about what happened? And I mean, in terms of consequences and what happened to you as a result of this experience?
Yeah, sure. It was actually, from what I gather now on reflection, the person was just jealous of me or intimidated by me. And I would never have guessed it because they were so talented as well. They're as talented of an artist. And what they did is they would, have blatant lies, like ridiculous lies. But they would always have a way of, whether it's showing you a text message or showing you things around in your environment that are not, that they look like you could, if you actually looked at it, you go, wow, that looks believable now. But the lies are so outlandish. And what eventually ended up happening was he spread around so many things, and I guess I just eventually got hip to it, and I just started not trying to empower it and ignore it. And eventually they got it did affect me emotionally, and it affected me stressful-wise because just of the types of drama and the workplace motivation it creates, where you're not as motivated because you feel this person is favored, and they're getting away with these things, and you got nobody to go to. That part is stressful. But eventually they caught up with them, and eventually they did not work at the place after about 3 years. I don't know if it's because their credentials were fake or what it was, but, it's tough to deal with.
Troy, thanks again for sharing your story with us. Stephanie, that sounds like exactly what you're writing about in your book.
Especially the blatant lies. And one of the reasons why gaslighters give blatant lies to people is because it makes the other things that they're doing not seem so bad. So when you're confronted with these outlandish things, of course we're going to pay attention to that, but not see behind the scenes where they're sabotaging.
Saul from Stevens Point emailed us to ask if you could talk about the difference between gaslighting and pathological lying.
Pathological lying can be part of gaslighting, but a pathological liar isn't necessarily doing the other behaviors of trying to control and manipulate. That's a little bit of the difference. Pathological liars, they may not, hide things and tell you that you sold their things or that you lost them. They may not have as much, infidelity going on, but it's still a problem, and it's still something that needs to be addressed in a relationship if you work with someone that's a pathological liar, because, again, it's part of being a gaslighter.
800-642-1234, the number to call to join our conversation about gaslighting today. Stephanie Sarkis is with us, and we're talking about what gaslighting is, what the behavior looks like, what to do about it, and pretty much everything connected to it. Share your story with us at 800-642-1234. Stephanie, do gaslighters know what they're doing? Is this a conscious behavior?
It really depends on the gaslighter. So if you're a gaslighter with a personality disorder, like we talked about, narcissism, or if you have antisocial personality disorder, again, that's sociopathy, you think that you have this egocentric personality. I'll say it again, it's egocentric. And that means that you think that you're okay, but everyone else is crazy. So you're not going to seek help, because if someone confronts you about the behavior, you'll say, nothing's wrong. You're the one that's too sensitive. That's the thing they go to a lot. Gaslighters will tell you you're too sensitive. But again, if you're a person that grew up with parents that had gaslighting behaviors, you may have learned how to do blatant lying just so you wouldn't be hurt. So again, you carry those behaviors into adulthood, and you may not really need to use them anymore. So that's where you realize that you're having some behaviors that are impacting your relationships. And that's when you start seeking help. So, again, we have people that do gaslighting behaviors that have personality disorders, and people that just learn those behaviors when they were younger as a coping mechanism.
There's one thing that Troy said that I wanted to follow up on, and that is he described the person who was engaging in this gaslighting behavior. He suspected that they were intimidated by him, or they thought they were maybe jealous of his talent and didn't realize how talented they were. Do we often see gaslighting behavior from people who suspect they may be inferior, even if they're not?
Yes, gaslighters want to be the center of attention. If there's anyone that is drawing more attention because of their abilities, they will do whatever they can to bring that person down so they can be now the center of attention.
When does standard manipulation, which I guess all of us do to one extent or another, cross the line into gaslighting?
Well, there's influence used in all sorts of different arenas in life, but when the influence turns into using this to control people, that's the issue. So advertising, for instance, the purpose isn't control you, it's to sell you an item. But when you're in a gaslighting relationship or with a gaslighting coworker, they're trying to basically burn everything down to the ground. They want you to suffer, and that's not just influence, that's abuse.
Let's talk about identifying gaslighting behavior. You have a list of behaviors in your book, and it's pretty extensive, but let's talk about the major ones that people should look out for.
One is pitting you against other people, so telling you that so-and-so said something about you. And instead of going to that person and saying, hey, the gaslighter said you said this, you just get mad at that person. And that's exactly what the gaslighter wants. They want you to be mad at someone so you align with the gaslighter instead. That's called splitting. They also do this thing called triangulation, where they'll tell you to give a message to someone else. So you go ahead and send that message, and then the gaslighter will deny they ever told you to say that to the other person. So it's kind of crazy-making behavior. And again, the idea is they want people to get upset with you, and so the gaslighter will just sit back and watch this drama unfold. And they get kind of a high off knowing that they caused the drama. They also, again, will tell people that you're crazy. They'll tell people that no one's going to believe you if you say something. Because, again, these people look very pulled together, and they can appear to be really kind of decent people. So, again, really important why you need to document. I also want to mention, too, that if you leave a gaslighter, again, you need to go no contact with this person because things will never get better with this person. And sometimes at work you have to wind up leaving your job. It's unfortunate and unfair, but sometimes that's the way that you get away from the constant torment of a gaslighter. Or as Troy was saying, that he just tried to not feed into it. And when gaslighters get bored with your response or you're not responding, they tend to move on to another victim.
Let's take a quick call before our break, and we might, Stephanie, have to get your response after that. Let's go to Dell in Milwaukee, and Dell, we'll ask you to be as brief as you can.
Okay, yes. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yes. I was a victim of a gaslighter, too. Actually, he is now my ex-husband. Kind of used to tell a little bit of lies, to my family and to my kids, and it ended up to be a pretty bad situation, so I did end up divorcing him, but coming to find out that it's so true what your guest is saying, that they do try to manipulate and control, and now it's a sad situation because now I see him and he's like the loneliest man ever, and he could never apologize more than for me to forgive him, but I just learned that these lies that he used to say about me were obviously never true, and it put a little damper between my family and I because they ended up believing him after a little while, and mm-hmm. after 17 years being married, I kind of had to say no. Okay. I'm done with this. So,
all right, Dell, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. We'll get Stephanie's reaction in just a moment. You could share your story with us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Stephanie Sarkis is an author and licensed mental health counselor. Her new book is Gaslighting: Recognize Manipulative and Emotionally Abusive People and Break Free. Our conversation continues in a moment. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. We're talking about gaslighting. Wondering if you believe you've been the victim of this kind of behavior. Do you see it in our culture more these days and in politics? And how does it affect you? We're having that discussion with Stephanie Sarkis, an author and licensed mental health counselor. She has a new book out titled Gaslighting: Recognize Manipulative and Emotionally Abusive People and Break Free. Stephanie, before the break, we heard from Dell, who described a 17-year relationship with a gaslighter. How common is this kind of thing?
It's very common. I think it's really difficult for people that our victims of this to speak out, and I really appreciate Del doing that, because this person does make you feel like no one's going to believe you if you say something. And I also want to speak to the part where she said that her ex is apologizing. And, of course, I can't speak particularly about her case. But what I've noticed in people with gaslighting behaviors is that when they apologize, it's not a true apology. It's an apology to get something in return. And as soon as you do what they want, then the apology's dropped. So also, gaslighters tend to have this thing called cognitive empathy, which means they'll tell you what they think you want to hear, and they will sound very empathic and caring, but they don't really feel the emotions behind it. And again, it's a way to get control over you.
Let's take another call. Diane is joining us in Burlington. Diane, go ahead.
Good morning. I have a close relationship with someone who has been diagnosed as having a personality disorder. She does not recognize your feelings. If you're frustrated or something, it's wasted emotion because she doesn't recognize it. She also has an issue with hoarding, and she very much denies anyone that she has a problem. It's everybody else that has a problem. And I mostly have been frustrated trying to get any kind of help for her because she needs help, but she doesn't recognize that she does.
Thanks, Diane. Stephanie?
This is very common when people have personality disorders. Again, that's an egocentric personality, that they think that no one else has a problem or everybody else has a problem, but they don't. And part of getting treatment is that you have to come to terms with the fact there's something that you need to change. And again, that's why it's so hard to get treatment for personality disorders, because the person doesn't feel like there's something wrong with them.
Diane, thanks for the call. Let's take another call. This time it's Bob joining us. And Bob, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Good. So, a couple of things. You know, my wife and I, we've been in and out of counseling. We definitely have a dysfunctional relationship, and I know that I have very narcissistic tendencies and things that I'm working on. I can definitely relate to a lot of what you're describing here. I can also attest to the fact that I don't specifically do this intentionally. I don't realize that I'm doing a lot of these things. To answer that question, I guess are there varying degrees of this disorder? Because I don't feel like I go as extreme as some of the things you're saying, and then also am I pretty much done and lost for wear, or is there any possibility of overcoming this and turning things around?
Bob, thanks for sharing that story with us. Stephanie?
First, Bob, yes, there are degrees of narcissistic personality disorder or narcissistic behavior. We could all have narcissistic behaviors from one time to another, but when they get to the point where they're impacting our lives and impacting our relationships, then you meet the criteria for a disorder. The other part of it is that, Bob, the fact that you called in and you're talking about it is a really good sign, because people with narcissistic personality disorder usually will not admit that they have issues. So that means that you're probably on your way towards getting better, and that's wonderful.
Bob, again, thank you for sharing your story with us. And much of your book is written for those who've suffered from the effects of a gaslighter, but you also include information that would be helpful to someone like Bob, who maybe recognized gaslighting behavior that they themselves engage in. What's the best thing for someone to do if they think they may be this person?
Well, first is to recognize it, which, as we've seen, Bob recognizes it, which is great. Also, counseling can be very helpful, particularly a type of counseling called cognitive behavioral therapy. That's where you challenge your negative thoughts or distortive thoughts that you have, because we have the self-talk in our heads all day. And what we tell ourselves is usually how we react to situations. So part of it is having a counselor help you through that negative thinking and distorted thinking, so you can come up with thoughts that are more beneficial to you, and also take responsibility for your behaviors and find new behaviors that are more healthy for relationships than the workplace.
Stephanie, I also want to ask you about gaslighting in politics. More specifically, you wrote an op-ed for USA Today earlier this month in which you called President Trump a classic gaslighter. Talk more about that.
Sure. Again, when you have a president that says what you're hearing and seeing isn't what's happening, that is a classic line from a gaslighter. I could not make that phrase any more gaslighty than it is. Also, you see some blatant lying. Just yesterday, he was lying about that the Wall Street production was stopped after 9/11, or that it wasn't stopped, just to justify him doing a speaking engagement right after the synagogue murders. And so what happened was that, yes, after 9/11, Wall Street was closed, and he said that it was not. So it's little things like that that are starting to add up. Also, it's saying that, again, that what you're seeing and hearing isn't true, or he'll blatantly lie, and he'll be called out on it. New York Times is keeping track of how many lies he said during his presidency, and I think we're up to the thousands now, verifiable lies, and he does not seem to care. It's also pitting people against certain groups. It's also engaging and expecting loyalty from people, unrealistic loyalty, and when those people he perceives are not loyal, then he immediately dumps them. That's classic behavior. We've also seen that from a lot of dictators in the world, pitting people against each other, having absolute views, trying to rile people up, and it's very concerning.
We've got just a few minutes left. We've identified what gaslighting is, how gaslighters operate. Let's talk about dealing with it. Where should somebody start if they have a gaslighter in their life? When is it best to confront a gaslighter, for example, and when is it best to just ignore the behavior?
Confronting a gaslighter may not actually make it better. It may make it worse, and you're just going to have the gaslighter deny it they did it. So most of the time what helps, and first of all, I want to say if anybody's in a relationship where their safety is a concern, reach out to a domestic violence shelter first to find out what steps you need to take, because that's your first priority is your safety. But when you leave a gaslighter, again, you just need to say it's not working out, and then you need to cut off contact. Because, again, people with gaslighting will do this thing called hoovering, which is trying to suck you back into the relationship, because they have this narcissistic need that needs to be filled, and they do not like having attention taken away from them. So they'll promise you the world if you come back. But, again, this will never get better.
Do we have an obligation to call out gaslighting when we see it?
I think absolutely we do, and I think that one of the good things that's come out politically is that we're becoming more aware of gaslighting behaviors. Now, calling them out doesn't mean that the gaslighter is going to change, but I think it draws more attention from other people that these behaviors are pathological and shouldn't be tolerated.
I mean, are there people who seek out someone who behaves this way because of their own personality disorders?
I don't think they do it consciously. I think it's an unconscious thing. I think also gaslighters tend to target people in helping professions because they tend to be sensitive to other people's needs, and that's exactly what the gaslighter wants. And I want to keep in mind, though, that doesn't mean that the gaslighter looks like a gaslighter when you first meet them. They look completely normal, and so they start ramping up this behavior slowly. So that's part of the issue, too, is that people feel like, how could I have gotten into this relationship? I know better. It's because the behavior has started so slowly. It's the proverbial frog in the pot. You turn up the heat little by little, and people are in these abusive relationships and without even realizing how they got there.
Finally, and we've only got about 30 seconds left, what treatment or counseling options are available to people who've suffered severe cases of gaslighting?
Again, there's cognitive behavioral therapy. There's also mindfulness meditation has been found to be very helpful when people's emotions start kind of getting away from them or they start getting really anxious. And again, above all, we really need to distance ourselves from gaslighters.
Stephanie Sarkis is an author and licensed mental health counselor. Her new book, Gaslighting, Recognize Manipulative, I wish I could say that word, and Emotionally Abusive People and Break Free. Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show.